this. We should not wait until they are not able to stand before we intervene. So, apart from learning the resilience, what I feel in my Malawian heart is that we can't wait any longer to try and do something about it, to stop the knocking down that the people get from the various contributing factors to food insecurity.
Very interesting. Laura, what about talking to us too from the deepest, the better part of the bottom of your Spanish heart and soul? Are there any remaining skeptics about climate change in the region, or do most people now believe that it is a science that you have to follow?
To be honest, if in this region there is still a skepticism on climate change, it's because they either have been here one day or one hour. Because if you stay one week, you can see the climate change in action immediately. Or if you are from the region, like I consider my heart is in this region, as Duncan said, I've been 27 years coming back to this region in Malawi, Mozambique, and South Africa. So let me tell you, Shaka, look, all of us, we go to the villages, all of us, we go to the coastal areas, all of us, we move around this region. And you can see, as Duncan said, how people, you see how the maize wilts year on year because of drought. You see how the cyclones enter through that coastal area, low coastal areas of the lower lands of Mozambique, and went all the way to the Chimanimani Mountains, destroying the mountains and bringing them down. I mean, that's climate change. These are massive effects of the climate change that we are seeing physically every year on year, as Duncan say, but also every day. You see, when it rains, it doesn't rain anymore or nicely and peacefully so that the maize will grow and it will rain on time. No, it rains so much that the seeds are washed away, or it doesn't rain at all, so it wilts. So also something very important, building resilience is critical. And building resilience is about changing some behaviors. We have this problem in Southern Africa. We are dependent on maize harvests. And the maize is very, very delicate to climate change. We really need to move here in this region in the past, before the maize was established hundreds of years ago. It came in from obviously America. They were small cereals, drought resistant. There was the cassava. There were all these type of crops that people were doing that will resist those shocks. Didn't rain, but it will grow. The millet, the sorghum, the small grains, we call them. And also the cassava is there. But we have lost that tradition. So to bring back those traditions is extremely important. So one of our jobs, SADC, WFP, FAO, and others, is to try to animate communities to diversify, to plant different things, to not to focus on one type of commodity crop, the maize, but to diversify and to make those crops that are resistance to tough weather more available so people can plant and people can consume them and they get used to it. I think that's extremely important because the climate change is here, not only now, but to stay and to be worse. So we have to get prepared. We have to prepare ourselves with the communities. And the governments are very conscious. The governments in this region and SADC is leading through resilience frameworks and others. SADC is really leading the way to inform and to take actions, how to change that. So sorry, a bit long, but I'm very passionate on this topic and really it's very, very critical in our region. Yeah.
Very interesting. Duncan, when you look at the conclusions and recommendations in your report, what specific measures do you recommend that needs to be adapted and adopted in order to address the outstanding issue of food insecurity in the region?
As a region, we are recommending several things. You know, as a region, we were sitting on probably one of the biggest water bodies around us. Yet, irrigation only covers 7% of our cultivable land in SADC. there is a challenge that most of the production is from smallholder farmers who grow less than 5 hectares. So probably to do large scale is difficult. But what we are recommending is, we are recommending now to move into community irrigation schemes for so that communities can grow twice a year. Maize, for example, which Lola talked about, 3-4 months you have a new crop. We can't continue relying on the erratic rain in SADC for production. That's one. The second issue is we need to build the resilience of our population. So we're recommending in there expansion of social protection, both in terms of numbers and the coverage. The reason we are pushing for this is that it's going to give people resources, income, enable to increase productivity. SADC, at the moment, we are one of the few regions with the lowest productivity. Our yields are very low. Our production is very low. Our population is growing. If you look at our production the past 5, 6, 7 years, it has remained static. The only thing that is growing is the population. So we need to improve. There's room to improve how we grow crops, how we find income and build communities. The third thing we're recommending is, of course, improvement of the value chains. So in SADC, most of our production is sold as primary commodities. So we export these commodities, harvest them, bag them, then sell them. We miss a lot of leverage on the way where we could go into agro-processing. By agro-processing, we bring in these hordes of youth that are looking for employment in marketing, in processing, in transportation. It's one of the easiest ways of increasing agricultural production. And the lastly, I want to talk about diversification. Rora is right. On the mark. One of the challenges of our diets is cereal dense. It's just maize, very little vegetables and seasonal at that and salt. That's why our malnutrition is so high and stunting is so high in the region. So we are encouraging to go back to the traditional ways, as well as diversify from just cereal-based diets. There are countries like DRC, which rely on cassava. Countries like Botswana, where I am, they used to rely so much on sorghum, which does well in this kind of climate. But we have shifted to maize, probably because it was easier and cheaper to grow. But we need to go back and improve the way our nutrition and our production is done, Shaka.
Duncan, it is very interesting that you mentioned sorghum because I come from Kabale, southwestern Uganda, where sorghum is one of the most important things that you cannot joke with. Finger millet, and of course, maize.
Also. Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Now, Duncan, let me take you back to the issue of production. You talked about how production is low. What have you been able to, what could you identify as the fundamental root causes of that, the fundamental root causes of production being low?
Okay, so Shaka, the fundamental roots is that one, as we've kept farming, like I said, our farming holdings are very small land holdings for the majority of the people, and they farm there year in, year out. Every year they are on there. So the soils have become very, very infertile. You put something in there coupled with the poor rainfall, then there's very little that comes out of that soil. As a region, we are the least region that uses fertilizers. So a combination of poor soils because of overgrowing, and you don't even have chance for fallowing so that it can regenerate, the soils need to be helped. So the region is working on its fertilizer policy to try and improve the production and productivity. We also are aware of the effects on climate change of organic, inorganic fertilizers. So there are also large programs that the region is putting in place, what we call climate smart agriculture, how you grow that crop. In the past, many people would just monocrop, clear the soil, grow maize, and wait for it. But like you do in Uganda, Dr. Shaka, in one field you find three or four crops and they help each other. So it's those things that we're trying to push at, as a region to improve productivity. Just the way you plant maize, for example, if you follow the new methods of growing maize, you can increase three or four times the amount of harvest that we're currently getting in the region. The potential for maize, for example, is up to 8,000 to 10,000 tons. Commercial farmers in South Africa achieve that in some of these countries. But on average, our farmers, if you reach 2,000 tons per hectare, you've done well. So you can see the gap that is there. We must make sure that probably they may not reach 10,000 immediately, but we improve the production so that they should be closer to the potential of production. Use the same piece of land a bit more effectively.
Interesting. Laura, to what extent do you agree with Duncan's recommendations regarding the measures that need to be taken and must be taken in order to address the fierce urgency of food insecurity in the region?
No, I fully agree with the SADC assessment on the situation, and what he has said is very clear. All the different steps that he mentioned. Now, I just wanted to add maybe one that he mentioned, but just to add a little bit the gender lens in these things, because I think in this region we have a high potential women and youth that are working in the field. He mentioned how the youth needs to be re-engaged and really learning the new ways of farming and engaging. So fully agree. But also we know that the women are large producers. There are many of these smallholder farmers are women. And the women is very interesting because the women are not only producing for selling, but also when they produce and if they diversify their food production, they are also improving the nutrition of their family themselves. They are eating better at family level, and then they are also putting in the market a lot of different vegetables and cereals and pulses, etc., because women do a lot of vegetables and pulses as well, beans and other types, cowpeas, etc. So I think it's very interesting that we also add that the importance of women in Southern Africa and how we need to work with them more. And with welfare program, with SADC and others, with UN Women, we have been really very proactive trying to work with women smallholder farmers groups to give them the ability to reach the markets, basically training on financial literacy so that you know you are putting so many kwachas or so many rands into the field and you are going to get so much out of it, and when you sell it, this is your benefit. So financial literacy, very important, so that it doesn't stay in the very small production, one bag or two bags, but they can increase. Also, helping them with the access to markets, with special apps, like in Zambia, our team has been working with the government and farmers cooperatives so that they have an app that is in the phone and they can say, okay, in this community, we have put together 2,000 tons of cowpeas. So who wants to buy? And the buyers, they bid for it. And they come to the community and they collect it. So there is a lot of things we can do with the new technologies, as Duncan said, and also having the gender lens in the food security. For us, World Food Program, extremely important. Don't forget the women importance in at all levels of food security in this region. And I think SADC is working very strongly with the, on that, as Duncan very well said. So fully in agreement with Duncan.
Very interesting. How could anyone probably forget the significance of women in this business? Because the last time I checked, I think in Africa, the women are the most important producers, really.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
I don't think anybody is forgetting, but we have to remind ourselves to make an extra effort.
Exactly. I entirely agree. They are the most important producers. And just to add to what Roa said, we have a whole program at the SADC Secretariat, which makes sure that in every program that we come up with or any strategy guidance, we've put in that gender lens to bring out the full potential of contribution of women and the youth.
Perhaps we should go a little bit further than simply talking about how the women are the single most important producers. What about some who say that we really need a little bit of democracy here, because yes, the women can actually produce, which they do, but when it comes to control, that becomes an issue.
Absolutely, Shaka. So many I've noticed that many member states of SADC are changing even the basic land laws to now recognize the importance of women and ownership of land, because without access to these productive factors, they can produce, but they have no control. So you can't get credit, you can't make decisions about marketing. So these issues are very important, and we should always remember to put them on the table. Thank you very much for bringing it up, Shaka.
You're most welcome, Duncan. Now, Laura, let's talk a little bit about the vision thing. I realize, obviously, that you've been pretty much across the African continent. But when you moved to Johannesburg with the added responsibility of being the regional director of the World Food Program, surely you must have come with a vision. What was your vision when you came, and how far have you been able to accomplish that vision?
Yeah, for me, the vision, in fact, thank you for that question, Shaka, very, very important and very, very relevant for me and for my team and for all our partners as well. The first time I came to this region, as I told you, I was a very junior person, and I was working in Duncan's country, in Malawi, in Detsa. Detsa is a district that borders Mozambique, and at that moment, there were 145,000 Mozambicans from the Angonia, Tete province of Mozambique, in that district of Malawi. And my job was basically to ensure that they were food insecure while they were in refugees in Malawi. So if you want, why I'm saying this? Well, I'm saying this because I've seen this region for 27 years, no, at this moment. And my vision when I came then to Jobur 4 years ago, well, I was very clear to say, look, if in 24 years the situation remains the same and is even worse, I will say, if you allow me, food security-wise, than when I was in that village or district capital in the border between Malawi and Mozambique, what does WFP need to do to support the governments and to work with, not to support, to work with, and with the SADC and et cetera, to change something? And the conclusion for me is, like, it cannot be business as usual, basically. We have been, as WFP, maybe too many years providing food assistance. And what we need to do is much more what Duncan said at the beginning. We need to know better and earlier what is going to be the problem. So this is why these assessments that he mentioned is important. So we need to know how many people will be food insecure. And then, most importantly, to act early, not just to provide food and transfers, but to build, to help these communities to build resilience, to ensure that they are not going to be during the lean season in November, December, January, February, again needing food, but they will be able to produce their own food. So basically to work more on community resilience, but early enough in the year, so people, not so many millions, appear at the end of the year and every lean season, food insecure. So basically my vision was, let's try to reverse the trends of food insecurity by working more in a sustainable long-term manner and helping the communities to build their own capacities, what we have been discussing. So that's the, in simple note, in simple division, because as Duncan said, we have many more citizens in the region, we have much more impact of the climate change, and the production is reducing and it's not enough. So a number of actions need to be put together. But if I can conclude, that one will has been my vision, and we're working towards it with all the partners. Yeah, thank you, Chuck.
You're most welcome, Rora. But talk to us about the collaboration between your agency, the World Food Program, and SADC, the Southern African Development Community, and indeed the respective governments. How is the collaboration?
The collaboration is excellent. We meet with the Secretary Tax frequently, and her team. Here you have an example, Duncan, with an excellent partnership. And I will say maybe in four areas, I think we have progressed a lot. One is this one of working together, technical assistance on the area of assessing what is the food insecurity in the region and what can be done to avert it. That's one. The other one is all the area of trade, logistics, movement of food and other ports and et cetera. There we have worked a lot, and we are really moving towards linking as well with the African free trade and really seeing how we can contribute.
Let me ask you the question about the report that you are able to compile. Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that in the spirit of African unity, that you share, that you compare and contrast with what is happening in Southern Africa, in SADC, with those of your colleagues in the East African Community and ECOWAS?
Yes. We publicize our report once it comes out. It's freely available on the internet, and we're moving a step further in the next few months, where we'll even be putting the data that we've used to compile the report, so that anyone who wants to do additional analysis or check the accuracy can work with the data that we used.
And for that, I have to say, frankly, once again, that I have been profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have had the opportunity to interact with both of you for the first time on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Southern Africa. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive.